Fam, life really is like a box of chocolates. And like my friend Miles shared in our convo this month, you never know what you're going to get, but it's up to you to make something out of it. Turns out, humor's a good way to do that. Whether it's cartoons, animation. TV, well, youngest prefer watching shows on their cell phones, but I'm a TV baby, so I prefer the box, or stand-up comedy. Humor provides a point of view that helps you relate to the world, even when you're under the weather, like Miles was when we spoke. Still, he brought the funny as he shared the anatomy of a joke, how comedy is the circle of life. And what Urkel and Richard Pryor have in common? Yeah, I know, right? Enjoy Miles' masterclass, fam. After you experience our conversation and his work in progress, you'll be encouraged to find humor in your hardships. You'll be schooled in the craft of joke writing, and you'll think twice the next time you throw your garbage into a dumpster. Hey, fam, I'm your host, Moniz, and welcome to Works in Progress, Conversations with Storytellers.
I'll give up kind of nursing a little stomach. Okay.
All right.
You look amazing.
Thank you for inviting me over.
Yeah. Extra ever after. Miles Gross.
Hey, Miles. Hey. I'm so happy you came.
Oh, well, thanks for inviting me.
Of course.
So nice. You got water set for me.
Yes.
You know I love water. Water is delicious. Oh, my goodness.
It's God's drink.
It is the Lord's.
The Lord.
Beverage. Sometimes he'll turn it into wine.
Really?
When he wants to get.
Right. When he wants to get.
A little freaky.
A little funky.
A little freaky.
Yeah.
Friday.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Like, it's amazing to see you.
How long has it been? Don't give me a lie.
No, look. I mean, look, I met you.
Yeah.
Like, 90. Were you in the building when I got there?
I feel like 13, I 16. Was there. When did you get there?
98.
No, I don't think I started shacking with Rael until... No, I think we got... Ooh. This is not about me, Miles.
Oh, right.
Okay, so we started shacking around that time. It might have been time. Rael was there
first. It was a scandal in the building. We knew y'all was shacking.
Right? Scandal. We were the scandal. You remember where we lived?
That building was bad.
Yeah, no. Rael moved in first.
Okay.
And then I moved in with him.
Yeah.
So we came around the same time.
All right.
Yeah. So
that's 98.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
That's a long time.
That's pre pandemic. And then you was nice enough to have me come down and read. You had a piece and I read for that.
Mm-hmm.
I did a reading. And how long ago was that?
That was about 6 years ago.
That's long.
We gotta do better.
Years. Like this.
I know we gotta do better, Miles.
Time goes
so fast.
Bad.
In Hollywood, especially, it's like a whole different dimension.
I know.
Basically.
Although, look, I'll say this, and this is not like I'm not bragging. Uh-huh. I think this is all right, it's a mini
brag. Okay, mini brag. Okay, mini flex.
Yeah. I think for us in this business, this is gonna come off horrible, but I'm telling you it's the truth. Because we're so aware that from time to time we'll be on camera,
mm-hmm.
there's this attempt to kind of keep it together. Because I'll go on social media
uh-huh.
and I'll look at people I went to school with.
Oh.
And for all of you, I'd be like, you look wonderful. But some of them, I'm like, oh my God, I'm that age? Like,
they
look like their own parents. And I'm like, are we the same age? And like, yeah, you are. That's how old you are.
It's something about being out here. First of all, Miles Gross.
Yeah.
Author. TV writer.
Yeah.
Comedian.
Aw.
You do all the things.
Yeah.
And we got teaching artists in common, too, so we could talk about that, too. But you're from New York.
I'm from New York.
Right.
Queens.
Yeah. Okay. Wait a minute, is that where Coming to America, did they go to Queens?
That's where he went to find his queen in Queens. Oddly, I found my queen in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Yeah, she's from Brooklyn.
Like a vampire in Brooklyn? She a vampire?
Yeah, Eddie just paroling the, perusing the boroughs. He was just looking for stuff.
So you, New York.
Yeah.
And then tell me how you ended up out here. What's your origin story?
I did, like I think a lot of people do. You go, hey, I'm gonna go to Hollywood.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be a star. And so I came out, and I was out here for 5 years. And I don't know if you know, but I was not a star at all.
Well, I mean, I figured if you were in the building with us, you weren't a star.
Yeah. You know, look, I got a lot of stories from that building, but
we can talk about, share a couple, because actor extraordinaire too. Forgot to say that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I had the most moral, this is such a moral dilemma. You shouldn't have to have this. Like, there was a dumpster. Do you remember the?
Yes.
My apartment was right by the dumpster.
Because you were on the bottom floor by the back door where all the action happened.
Oh, you guys had the penthouse.
Yes.
You had the top floor with the terrace.
Yes.
With the little half a terrace. Yeah, but y'all had it. Living large. I had the dumpster apartment by the laundry room with that one broken washing machine. None of times I got sucked in and put my clothes in there and it stopped midway through and I had all these wet clothes.
Yeah.
But the dumpster and people would be in the dumpster. And when they were in the dumpster, they were eye level to look in my apartment. Like, they would just be in the dumpster. I'm like, hey. And I remember one time I was running late for an audition. So I have my garbage and I go out the back and I go and I'm getting ready to throw the garbage in the dumpster.
Yeah.
And then before I throw it, there's a dude in there. And I'm like, this is a moral dilemma. Do you throw garbage into a dumpster
on
that
top
is occupied by a human being?
Yes.
And I'm like, that's bad, but I gotta go to this audition. And I'm like, And then he says, give it to me. I'm like, thank you. And then he took the garbage.
Right.
Yeah, he took it out of my hands.
Wow.
Yeah.
And perused through it instantly, probably, to see what was going on.
There wasn't nothing in there. Because by the time it was my garbage, there was nothing left. I picked through it. There ain't nothing in there. But anyway,
you ended up in this. That wasn't your first apartment, though, was it?
No, it was.
Oh my God! You came from New York to that place.
Yeah,
bless your heart.
That place wasn't that bad, though.
Well, no. When we first moved in, it was actually pretty nice because the manager at the time, he was being, you know, purposeful who he let in.
Yeah.
But then when he just, I think it switched management hands, and they were just like anybody could come in. It became free fall. Then
and they weren't adhering to the occupancy laws. Like, those are studio apartments.
Yes, Udios, actually.
Udios.
Yeah.
And it was like a clown car sometimes about the amount of people that would file out of the apartment above me. I actually would take a broom, like an old man, quiet down up there. There would be so much noise up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like eight people living above me in a studio. I don't know. They must have slept standing up in that.
Yeah, thing. It was like so many stories in that place. So many stories. So you come from Queens. I land there. And then you're just trying to get your feet wet as an actor, as a writer. I mean, what was the plan?
Actor. I was doing improv.
Okay.
And sketch. I was, not right away, but I found my way over to Acme Comedy. I went to the Groundlings first, but then I wound up at Acme Comedy Theater, which was good because I networked with a lot of good people over there. And then I got with a great improv sketch group called Hold the Cream with a bunch of wonderful, wonderfully talented people. And I'm still friends. I'm still friends with the Acme people, too. You know, somebody told me the first thing you got to do in L.A. is start meeting people.
And how do you do that? You just go to these different events or you eat them at Ralph's? What are we doing?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Right? It's your job. If you come out to LA, it's your job to go to things, to be at things.
Mm.
You know, it's a town of networking.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, it sucks for you because part of show business, part of the business is meeting people. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's meeting long lasting connections. And it's odd. You know, you can grow up somewhere and a lot of your friends, I think, tend to be people you grew up with.
Yeah.
But when you get out here, you pick them up. You pick up people along the way. You know, you have call sheets and they come with you. And some of those people stay your friends and you work with an ensemble and some of them stay your friends. And you just keep accumulating people. I think it's interesting to me, like on the holidays out here, particularly Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of Thanksgivings hopping from house to house. It was like
Friendsgiving.
Yeah.
Because we're all kind of like not homeless. We're orphans were kind of like gypsies.
We're displaced.
We're just out here, just kind of in the wind. Yeah. And then holidays come along. Like, I remember when I first moved out here, holidays were really depressing for me. Because at first I wasn't able to travel back home and I hadn't found those group of people that you're talking about. Yeah. And I was always like, oh, this is so depressing. Did I make the wrong choice? Why am I out here? But then I found Rael and he introduced me to all of his friends and I met people and you start collecting people. And you start realizing that there are some folks that become friends.
Yeah.
They're not just people on a call sheet. They're people that you're like, I just want to hang out and get to know you and spend time with you. And that's hard because so many people out here aren't from, well, no, I won't say that. The people who live here are like some of the coolest people ever. Oh, yeah, people from here. You can always tell.
People forget that there are people who were here before. Yeah,
we're like Columbus. We discovered LA.
Right. Columbus. Yeah, we discovered it. There was nobody here when we got here.
Right. And they're always the coolest people. They're always the chill people. But then you meet the transplants.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get some people who are a little, they're trying to do the most, right?
Yeah. They're doing too much.
And everything's an audition with people. It's kind of hard to find the real folks sometimes.
That's why I think there's a theater vibe out here, right? There's a theater scene.
Okay.
But it'll never be the New York theater scene.
Okay, what's the difference?
Because most of the people in your audience are in the business. Uh-huh. Like, it is such a closed community of I'm going to your show, you come to my show. Like, Or it's rarely just the civilians going to theater. Where in New York, it's civilians.
Yeah,
you don't have to think that the audience is filled with other actors who are judging you or trying to copy you or hating on you
and
steal from you or even admiring you, whatever it is.
Yeah,
I feel like you get even doing stand up. I feel like the vibe for stand ups here, people always talk about the East Coast is where people cut their teeth. Philly. You know, New York, Boston, and certainly, you know, the Eastern Seaboard down south. L.A. is not a place where you cut your teeth. You come out here developed because
Because you're trying to get a job.
Mm-hmm. That audience, you're not like, you want an audience because you want laughter, but really you're hoping some development executives are there, or directors, or casting people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the audience is here. So
does that make you perform differently? Do you have a chance to just work stuff out? I mean, you're trying to get a job. I'm just.
Well, I think of it, if you think of it to me, like I'll say baseball or any sport, when you're on the minor league levels, you are, and I'm not calling New York minor league, but when you're in the instructional league levels, you're more willing to try things out to learn.
Yeah.
But when you get on the majors, the stakes are higher. Like you have to come correct. Like, if you're writing for community theater in Scranton, like, you want it to be great, but then when you bring it out to L.A., it can't be a Scranton 9 because that'll be an L.A. 4, right?
Right.
You gotta up it.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Scranton.
Akron,
the office is there.
Oh, right. Anybody like that.
Yeah, right.
Well, so how do you – talk to me about the craft of telling jokes, writing jokes. Stand up, I mean, all of that. I know it's a craft to it. I know some people think you just get up there and just start talking. That ain't what it is. I want to hear from you as a master joke writer.
Yeah, master joke writer.
Oh yeah.
I think you either have a sense of humor or you don't. Number one, you can go to comedy class, but they're not going to teach you how to be funny. They can teach you the rules of comedy, the structure of comedy. They can't teach you to be funny. You're either funny or you're not.
Yeah.
And for comedians, and I've met a lot. I'm a producing partner and writing partner with J.B. Smoove.
Right.
And for years, we've been working together for 20 or so years. So I met a lot of comedians, whether they remember me meeting them or not. But I've met, from Dave Chappelle on down. And being funny is important to them. Like, it's not just a thing that they do to me. It's part of who they are. It's how they, they can, question this or respond to this. But I think it's the way they interpret life. I think it's the lens that they view the world
through. Okay.
But the structure, and I'm talking to you, and you know it. There is a structure to it.
Yeah.
There's
an art. There's a craft.
There's an art to it. I mean, and there's some really basic things, but innately, it's timing. you know?
Is that something that can be taught or learned, or you just figure it out by trial and error?
You have timing or you don't.
You
can try, but we all know we all know our friends who are funny, the ones who can tell jokes and the ones who can't.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying the same words, but there's, you know, I always say, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
For years has always made sure to have a musical guest.
Mm-hmm.
Because the music resets the rhythm. They do it twice in the show.
Okay.
It's because comedy is a musical rhythm.
Okay.
And they put the music in there, even when the sketches are bad and they're off, put some music on there, get the vibe back, get the flow back, and they go into Weekend Update, which is normally strong for them. They come out, as the show wanes, they put the musical guest on again. Music and comedy are so connected.
And I had never thought about it like that before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so just like with music, that's innate too, right?
Yeah. Okay. You can teach somebody to play the guitar, play the bass, but if they don't have it, they'll do the notes, but they won't feel the notes.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a joke, but you got to feel the joke.
Mm-hmm.
You got to feel, especially, you know, sitting backstage watching somebody like JB, who is very, you know, whether he goes out prepared, he's still in the moment and ready to react to the audience. And to watch him feel the audience and watch a joke change in the moment because he feels the funny.
Mm.
He's not just saying it. And you watch that. Like, you watch the development of a young stand-up who's nervously written their five-minute set, and they're doing the jokes. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But when they get past the material, they find their voice, their persona. And their persona comes with the way they tell their jokes, the rhythm that they use, the lens that they view things through. And that starts to make things funny without even the line being funny. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
comedians get jokes without even a funny line
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
they have the rhythm and the timing. And you kind of are buying into who they are at that point as well. So
what? How does that manifest for you?
I think I'm a consumer of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched comedy since I was little, like from, you know, Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah.
All the way up to anything. You know, I remember fighting. I'm old. So I remember fighting my parents because they wouldn't let me stay up to watch Flip Wilson.
Back to Flip Wilson.
That shows you how old I
am. Yeah. Okay.
Because he came on at 10.
Yeah.
And finally, they started letting me stay up to watch Flip Wilson. But so I understand. I was at the Groundlings, and I did the first level. And, you know, the Groundlings is a school.
Mm-hmm.
So like anything, you get promoted or you don't get demoted. I don't think you get demoted. But you can stay at a level and have to repeat it. And so I remember doing my first one, and I sat with the person who ran it, and they're like, I don't know if I should let you move on to the next level. I'm like, why? And they're like, because you never laugh. Like, you sit there watching people, and I think you're judging them.
Oh.
Yeah, you're judging
them. Are you?
Like, no. I truly have a hard time laughing, but it doesn't mean I don't think something's funny. It's just I'm too busy looking at the structure of it. And I'm also already seeing where it's going.
Uh-huh.
So to make me laugh, you'd have to surprise me and not do any of the five things I think is gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, and there's nothing wrong with the five things, because I think they're all valid.
Yeah.
I think they're funny. But I'm not gonna laugh at them because I already think it. It's only if you're gonna do something
So what are those five things?
No, well, I don't even know what those five.
Well, what then? What is like the structure of a joke?
First, you want to join the audience, right? And this is as a teaching artist too.
Yes. Right?
You want to do something that makes people go, I get that. I know that. I see that. I'm that
relatable.
Relatable. Mm-hmm. You relate to the audience.
Yeah.
You explore it a little bit. You exaggerate it, mm-hmm. and then you flip it.
Okay.
So connect,
uh-huh.
explore, exaggerate, flip.
Okay.
So it's like, I get it. I've done that. Wow, that's a crazy example of it. Oh, shit, I didn't see it going there. And to me, that's the basis of most jokes. You know, there's a surprise at the end. It has to feel familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say this for the joke teller. Often, I mean, this is more for stand-up than in writing, but I still think in when you're writing stuff out, there's a victim in comedy.
A victim?
Yeah. There's okay. someone who has to take the hit for most. It goes way back to slapstick. Okay. It goes way back to the first things that make a baby laugh.
Uh-huh.
Baby, you know, you go, bleh, and they
like
laugh.
Three Stooges comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
It's guttural kind of base humor. It's right. fart humor. It's like there's something, somebody embarrassed, somebody hurt. And it's sad as human beings.
That that's we need kind we of like to base, see that stuff. Yeah.
But it's a release. It's a release because yeah. we all, you know, I mean, you know, we're not all saints. But I don't have any examples, but I think if you were to look at any joke that you've ever enjoyed or any comedian that you ever enjoyed, you know, Richard Pryor was great at being the victim in his material. Dave Chappelle sometimes will turn it. That's where he's gotten into a lot of issues and in the perception that he's making somebody else or punching down.
Right.
But normally it's you. It's you ever see it? This has happened to me. And there's the punchline.
Right.
Coming after that.
Right.
There has to be a victim in it. It's, I don't know. I feel like using the word victim is pretty tough.
Yeah.
But it is.
But I get it. There has to be someone who's at the butt of the
yeah.
joke.
And most of the time it's the comedian.
Right.
Like if you're doing it right, you protect the audience by either making up a hypothetical character that's not you or me.
Yeah.
It is you or me. It's really relatable.
Yeah.
But we're not going to say it's you or me. Or I take it. I take the hit. They can split back and forth, right, in a scene.
Between the characters yeah. or the people?
Between the characters, between the people. I was just watching Erica Alexander from Living Single.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was just today, I was watching her talk about doing comedy in a scene. And Kyle.
Yes.
So they had a back and forth.
Yeah.
So Kyle says something to her.
Uh-huh.
She's the victim, right?
She took it.
And she didn't race away from it. We had to let her be. She had to be the victim for a moment.
Yeah.
But then she flipped and said something back to him. And then he was the victim.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's a back and forth version.
Yeah.
But
that's the basics of...
Hey, Urkel's saying, did I do that? He's the victim.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's like...
And is that does that translate to writing it as well?
Yeah, I feel like... All right, this... We can talk because, you know, I don't get to speak to a lot of writers about the process. But once I start a project, right, and I'm really immersed in it, writing dialogue.
Yeah.
It lives in my head, right? Even when I... stop. Like, and sometimes I'll stop even though I have stuff, but I'm like, no, I wanted to do 10 pages today.
Or, right, right. Save some for later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still there talking, right? And they can't wait. And you go, you know, you have to be a bit of a what's it called? We have multiple personalities.
I was gonna say schizophrenic.
Schizophrenic.
Yes.
Because you got to do conversations. And look, I put Tubi on. Sometimes Tubi is really fun to watch just the trailers for some of the films and watch her watch like she has a long wig and then in the next scene she has a short wig. Like Tubi is hysterical. And it's so funny to watch dialogue that clearly was written by someone who didn't bother to change the voice.
Right.
Let's go to the store. Yes, let's go to the store. We should go to the store together. Hey, mm-hmm. let's go to the store. Yeah. Like, it's one person writing every... To sit there and create these different voices,
yeah,
from really different perspectives. If you're really gonna explore it, and mm-hmm. this old and from here and younger from, and this one went to college and this one was in an accident, and be able to do that
mm-hmm.
is kind of an insane process.
Yes,
but they all want to win, especially in comedy, and. That's the balance of, well, who's the victim in this moment, and then who gets the comeuppance in this one, and who gets the line, the tags here, and it's a...
So the conflict is they all feel that they're right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, everyone is the star in their own movie.
Right, right.
JB and we've always talked about, and it made it on the curb, too, from our conversations, but that Forrest Gump. The movie you want to watch is Jenny.
Oh yeah, Jenny is
Jenny
hot mess.
Was the life.
Yeah, yeah. Jenny was out there.
Oh yeah. So he even said it on Parables. Jenny lived the life. But yeah. And it's like, but that's the whole thing. Like you in any bit of fiction, you know, the author's chosen to give us who the main character is.
Yeah.
But those are not like just kind of extras, these other characters, even if they come in for one moment.
Right.
If you wanted the camera wanted to follow them or the action wanted to follow, they have a life too. And you have to believe that.
Right.
So that their voice is filled with that when they walk in and they're not just saying, hey, you want to go to the store? Let's go to the store. I want to go to the store.
Right, right. There's gotta be something underneath it. The subtext, the intention. It's layered.
It's layered.
Good dialogue is layered. Bad dialogue, not so much.
Not so much.
Well, I want to talk about you're talking about what the work you do with J.B. Spool. So you're a producing partner with him. I mean, what does that look like? How does that work?
We just do, so you get, especially somebody like him, he gets called up to do a lot of different things. And I go with him and we figure out these things, whether they're corporate events, whether they're branded, it's a blur. As I was mentioning, you know, we have a show on at the time we're doing this, it's coming out, but it'll be on Amazon called Buy It Now, and it's a show similar to Shark Tank. And one of the producers, Jamie Siminoff, who invented the Ring doorbell, and he was on Shark Tank, and they said no, and look what happened. Like we all have it. They were like, it's going to be tough to educate the public to want to get a doorbell. Now, TikTok, you couldn't have TikTok if you didn't have the Ring doorbell because all the crazy videos.
That's right, right.
But he, even that, like he got called up to host that show. And then I got involved to go down there with him and find a way to tailor the show so that it felt like it was his versus just he.
So you have to know his voice.
Yeah.
Right. So that's sort of like speech writing, but for a comedian.
Yeah.
In a sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely times. It's knowing his voice. It's knowing what he's comfortable with. Sometimes I think this is a good explanation of who I am and what I do for him.
Okay.
If you ever saw the film Ali.
You're the corner man?
No, I'm Bundini Brown.
Got it.
Rumble, young man, rumble.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So I'm sometimes a hype man with him, but beyond that, we are like with our production company. We have pitched pilots. We have pitched feature films.
Yeah.
I've written scripts. We've worked with showrunners to put things together. When he was Caesar for Caesar's Casinos. I was right next to him. I was his consigliere, but also I was helping on the commercials and came up with a concept for one of the commercials and would help with dialogue on the set to, you know, make it feel comfortable.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have kind of like a Forrest Gump life as far as your writing and your career and things. Like
it is a lot of chocolate. Yeah.
So let's talk about the piece that you decided to share with us. What's that project?
Okay, so this is a cautionary tale project because you know I was like, well, what can I share? You know, so our company, JB and I, it's Alternate Side Productions.
Okay,
so it's a fairly new company, and right now we're in talks for a first look deal, and I think really coming off of his final season, Curvy Enthusiasm, you know, his reps felt like it's time. We got to get going. So a lot of the things that I've written or am writing on are kind of like encumbered, you know? So I'm like, well, what can I want to bring something that has some importance to it and something we can discuss. So this is a cautionary tale piece. Years ago, a friend of mine knew a player in the WNBA who wanted to write a show.
Yeah.
And so we sat and we spoke and I wrote a pilot for her. And she took it And she's running around pitching it everywhere. Uh-huh. I'm like, hi.
Writer.
Wrote that.
Yeah.
Involve me. I mean, cool. Pitching great.
Yeah.
You know, get it out there, but can we talk? And then I'd have people calling me up saying, yeah, man, we got a good script. Who are you? Who are you with the we, with the good and the script? What? And
wow.
Yeah. And so, and it just got out of hand to the point where, and yeah, then someone was trying to attach themselves to it, and it was this whole big thing. So finally I said, I'm not quite sure what you want to do. You're not really involving me. You pay me and it's yours. And she said she would pray on it.
Oh.
Okay. And I said, well, I already spoke to God. So, if, yeah, you wanted me to call God back.
You want me to put him back on the line with you, right?
Yeah, I was just on with him. Just got off the phone. So, yeah. So, this pilot, I couldn't find a small piece that, you know, because the context would have been off. So I just got kind of this opening monologue. And even this changed in another draft of it because people didn't like this. And I liked it. This, you'll see. But it's more, this is, as a writer out here.
Yeah.
I know you want opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's going to happen a lot. There's a lot of, you'll run into a lot of people who have status over you,
mm-hmm.
who will try to get something for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're out here trying to do what you can do, doing the best you can do, you'll go for it. Because why not? Like, you're splashing around in the water. I don't care if it's a rubber raft that comes by.
Right.
You're going to want to get in it.
Yeah.
But you still got to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Right?
You still have to have agreements in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was way too old to not have an agreement in place. I was just, it was a friend. And I still, and I'm not going to mention her name. She's a lovely person. And she was lovely the first day and lovely the day she said she was going to
pray about it.
Mm-hmm. Which is still a good thing to say.
Yes.
She could have told me to go F myself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But she didn't. She's nice, but certainly didn't have an understanding of the way business works.
Right.
And that writing is a labor.
Yes.
And it needs, it's valued, because I imagine if she played 10 games and didn't get paid.
It'd be a problem.
Yeah. And went up and didn't get paid. Yeah. And then the owner said, oh, you played, right? Let me pray on it. Let's see.
Well, that is the perfect introduction to this. So we're gonna check it out. And we're going to pray on it.
Yes, pray on it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Our POV is from the void of outer space. We begin to hear the voice of our main character, Tanisha Choker. As she speaks, we move toward the Earth in a gentle but brisk fashion. Our view of Earth is at times briefly interrupted by still shots, postcards, and images referenced by Tanisha.
Wow. It's really beautiful from up here. Isn't that always the way, though? The further you are from something, the better it seems. It's like memories. Ooh, or relationships. Yeah, relationships. See, that's why I delete phone numbers and stop following my exes on all social media platforms. Unless I'm using a fake account. Look, let me ask you something. When you look at this big blue thing down there, what you see? I mean, I know the obvious answer is the world, but for me, if you're asking, which would be the polite thing to do since I asked you, for me, I see basketball. I'm a professional basketball player, so it's hard for me to see something round like that and not see one. Mind you, not because I'm some kind of dumb athlete who can't see anything beyond the sports world. Nah, to the contrary. For me, basketball opened up the world. Because of basketball, I have seen parts of the world the average person never gets to see.
We see postcards that read, "Hello from," along with the name of the place that she mentions.
I've been to Russia.
We see a beautiful image of St. Vasos Cathedral in Moscow.
I've been to Turkey.
We see a stunning image of the Aspendos Theater in Sarik.
I've been to Lebanon.
We see an incredible image of the Sursok Museum in Beirut.
Just to name a few. Not bad for someone who grew up on the streets of Baltimore.
Thank you. It's weird hearing the words out loud like that.
Why?
Because it's stuff, it's here, it's on paper, but then when people say it, it's like, oh yeah. Yeah, it's a human other than my voice.
No. And so it's been a minute since you've seen it.
Yeah, it's been a while. I wrote that a little while back. And even that, so that's the very beginning of the pilot, and it's in outer space, and it was just, you know. So, all right, let me pull back. Pilots. Your thoughts on pilots. Are you a big fan of pilot episodes, or?
Well, it's what you got to do as a writer.
But what's the best approach? Do you feel that it needs to be encumbered with a lot of exposition, or should you start deeper in and then?
Well, you know, that's the thing that's going on now. Now they're saying they don't want pilots anymore. They want it already be in motion and going.
Yeah.
And I think some stories you can do that.
Yeah.
But some stories you got to start from the beginning. I feel.
Yeah.
So you can get an idea of who these characters are and get the foundation for what's going on. But, you know, when I first started writing, it was more about spec scripts. And spec scripts is when you're writing the voice on the TV show already, right? But now it's switched to TV pilots where you write your own ideas and everything. And now they're changing it again, talking about, no, let's go deeper into the story. So they keep moving the goalpost of when you tell your story, when you write your story, how they want to read it, I guess. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they keep changing it. I think Netflix changed it.
Okay.
When you could get all your episodes at once.
Yeah, that streaming thing pretty much. Yeah. The binging messed up.
Binging changed it, you know, when it was, when we were all patient human beings.
When was this? Old man.
Back in the old days, we'd watch something Tuesday night at 8. And you wouldn't get another one until next Tuesday
night at 8. Yes.
And you waited.
Yes.
That's gone.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because that the old storytelling, the situation comedy was all about the situation.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter. Like, Cheers. They own a bar. It'll go on forever. You know, whatever the premise was. It was, this is the premise, it'll go on forever. But now, and especially because the industry has changed and you don't even know if you're going to get a second season when you do something.
If you look like us most time, you don't.
No, I don't care how good the show is, mm-hmm. Lovecraft. You don't get a second season.
Right.
So you've got to write a story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be tight. And mm-hmm. you can't waste an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so, it's caused people now to want to start with their feet running. Like that mm-hmm. first episode has to be hyped, because there's so many other shows. If you don't grab, because a pilot episode being encumbered with telling so much backstory, they tend to be like, eh.
I mean, especially when we had the time, like you said, when people got,
we had no choice.
They had 10 years, they had 10, all this time. So you had the first season could be a pilot episode.
It could.
Because you're getting to know all the characters and everything like that. But now, like you said, you don't have that time.
It didn't matter. Look, the first season, the first episode was going to look like the seventh episode. It was going to develop like, yeah, right. The Cosbys are going to change their couch, but it's still going to be, maybe Cosby isn't the right guy to go to.
Perhaps not.
but you know what I mean? Like those situation shows, it was just going to be rinse and repeat. We weren't going to do anything. Even the cop shows, I know shows like, you know, people love Law and Orders and there's nothing wrong. Those are great shows. But it's someone committed a crime. Oh, no, we're never going to catch him. Holy crap, we caught him. End of episode. Next one. Mm-hmm. Oh, somebody committed a crime. Like, it's a formula.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now it's a story. It's like a an 8-year-old telling you a story. And like, and then this happened. And then this happened. And then this happened. It's like, all right, slow down. No. And then this happened. And that's what we want now. Like, and that's why we binge it. So you start the episode, you double back, you do bottle episodes.
Yeah.
Which are great.
A bottle episode.
Well, the studio's definition of bottle episode is you're shooting it cheaper, right? Because you're using less characters.
Yeah.
And usually in
one location.
In one location.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But creatively, I think it's an opportunity to deep dive emotionally on some characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people love the bear.
Mm-hmm.
And that Fishes episode,
mm-hmm.
that's a bottle episode.
Okay.
And that's the Emmy episode. Like, I don't know if you're a fan of Bear. Well, that episode is insane. It's probably the best episode to me of their three seasons. And,
okay.
And it's a bottle episode. So, whereas they...
But that leads me to this other question, though. Comedy. That is viewed as a comedy.
Yeah, it's not a comedy.
It is not a... What's going on with comedy, Miles? Where comedy is not really... Like, you mentioned the Cheers. You mentioned, you know, Frasier's and situation comedy. I understand growing up with that.
Yeah.
But now comedy today is not comedy.
Yeah, it's blurred.
Yeah.
I think it's blurred.
And I love writing dramedies. I love that. I love having the hybrid between comedy and drama. But even I know that's a dramedy. And why people don't like to say it, I don't understand. So they just say comedy, and it's not a comedy.
And even to me, calling it a dramedy
uh-huh.
is pushing it.
Really?
I think Bear is a drama.
Okay.
I think Bear is a drama, and it is just a truer view of life. Where people are funny in regular day life, but that doesn't, I don't live a comedy. My life is filled with drama and tragedy. I would not call my life a comedy.
Like, mm-hmm.
Comedy is where the intent is. The payoff is always going to be funny, even if it's dark humor.
Yeah.
That show is not that. That show is really an exploration of these characters and their feelings and their hopes and addiction and abuse and, well, maybe not so much abuse, but more addiction. It's not a comedy. Are people funny in it? Yeah, because in real life...
It's funny in drama and
right.
tragedy
right.
all the time.
And I think... But we grew up with it so separated
yeah.
that our dramas were so dry and mm-hmm. our comedies were so sitcom-y.
And so...
Set up punchline. Did I... You know, and I'll go back to, did I do that? Like,
yeah.
But we don't have that anymore. Our comedies are... Well, here's the thing. Our comedies are grounded in a way that they've never been grounded before.
Is that what this is? Is this grounded?
Bear?
No, the thing we just reviewed.
The Bear?
No, you didn't write The Bear.
My thing. Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, what we were going to explore with this is sexuality in the WNBA. You
yeah.
wouldn't know it from that because it was encumbered with... Me wanting to give you a lot of the main character in that little kind of and actually ditched it in a further draft, but it was sexuality in the WNBA and perception of sexuality and sexual identity in pro sports, because our two main characters were going to be an NBA player and a WNBA player. The NBA player was gay and had to hide it. The WNBA player was straight and nobody bought it.
Mm.
They all thought she was gay.
And you know why that resonates with me? Because I play basketball. And you know me. I'm a tomboy all
right.
the time.
Right.
So people always question my own sexuality, especially when I was playing baseball and volleyball and all this stuff. And I found myself having to like no,
right.
I am not gay. No, I just play basketball.
Right.
I just, can't women play sports? Like, why can't this be a thing?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And funny. And
yes.
sad.
Yes.
And like, that was what was going to ground it, is that it's real. It's
mm-hmm.
real that because you choose to do certain things, that people have these, they put all these things on you, these perceptions, and they weigh you down with them. But there's humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody watching can right now say, oh, well, Miles, well, the bear does that. I don't know that the bear does that. The bear really goes hard on these are characters that have been through it, that have really been through it. There's very little light in the bear.
Yeah, so is comedy in a crisis right now?
I well, how about this? I'll say, going, this is old man stuff again. When I was a kid, we had 2, 4, we had ABC, NBC, CBS. I was going to give you New York.
No, I like 2, 4, and 7. And Detroit, same numbers.
All right. So, and then Fox came later.
Yeah.
But we had 3 networks.
Yeah.
And nobody was programming for young, for kids.
Yeah.
So as a kid, I watched what my parents watched.
Me too.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And if I stayed home from school, I had to watch the soap operas, All My Children, General Hospital, Guiding Light, all this stuff, and game shows. There was very little programming specifically for me. Now, person of color, forget it. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Good Times. Ain't we lucky we had it? Like, we barely had any. It was so few shows targeted for us.
Right.
Now, there's, I don't care who you are. I don't care how you identify. This is a show specifically for you. Comedy is so subjective.
Yeah. To
what is funny?
Mm-hmm.
And something that one person thinks is hysterical, another person goes, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I find it tasteless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think comedy winds up splintering us. Right? So comedy is, you're in that corner, you're in that corner, you're in that corner. Whereas we all get drama. We all get pain. We all get anxiety. We all get fear. Those things resonate. And then grander things like a Shogun, we get that, all right, this is epic.
Yeah.
But comedy, I don't think they, I bet, you know.
Is that because we've gotten more sensitive as a people? Or, I mean, because the things you're mentioning didn't change. Yeah. We're just more aware of them now. So, and also as a person of color, I, like you said, we didn't have much to choose from. Yeah. So I laughed at the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
That wasn't for me, but I laughed at it. Yeah. I laughed at Lauren Hardy, right? I laughed at Steve Martin and all these people. They're not speaking to me,
yeah,
but I was able to find the humor in what they were just talking about, because you mentioned, like, you broke down the you know, the anatomy of a joke. I was able to understand. But now it seems like we're so sensitive to everything. Does that make your job as a comedian harder? Like, are you afraid to, like, step into something and suddenly be canceled?
I yes.
Okay.
It's a minefield. Well, I think the splintering is one thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a minefield now. You know, hopefully it'll swing back at some point. But yeah, I know you have to feel it as well. Like, you know, when you're putting something, when you write something, that it's a little risky.
You might too much.
Too
yeah.
much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll run it by people close to you,
mm-hmm,
and tell them to be honest, because I'll burn for this. Like, and more for my buddy, for JB, you know, I'm always on the watch for, like, you know, as we're putting something together, going, how this is going to be perceived. But that being said, I think it's just dangerous, and you got to really be careful in a way you never had to be.
Right, right.
It's a shame.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, when we were talking out in the green room,
yeah,
you said life is life in right now.
Yeah.
And how as an artist do you continue to commit to your craft when life is life? I mean, because people out there listening right now who want to be writers and artists and everything, but they got real stuff going on in their lives, and they're like, how do I find time to do this thing that is pulling me, but I got some real stuff going on in my life? You got any words for them?
I think your life is your art, and the second you forget that, you'll drown. He'll drown in it. Like, the only, an artist, if they're not finding a way to use what's given to them, they're stagnant. They're gonna, like, it's the old, that old joke, and the flood's coming and God sends the rowboat and you know the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole point of it, of that joke, is it's the flood's coming and you need to be safe, and guy's like, I got it, and he prays to God, like the person I wrote the pilot with. Mm-hmm. But pray to God that it be safe. And while they're waiting for God to save them, a rowboat comes, a van comes, a boat comes, a helicopter comes. And he goes, no, God's going to save me. I'm like, no, God saves you each and every day. God gives you everything you need each and every day. Mm-hmm. If you ignore it, that's on you. Mm-hmm. If you're an artist, if you're a creator, it's there. Mm-hmm. And as long as you stay open and active in it, the art will flow. And you know, I'll tag on this, you know, back to the teaching artist thing. So I was a teaching artist in schools for about 25 years working in public schools, and we would do social emotional learning. It was conflict resolution back in the days. It was social emotional learning. And we would do improv and theater games with kids and at-risk youth and tell them we were going to improv, and they would, you know, at first they would be nervous about improvising. And I'm like, you have to be nervous about improvising. Yeah. Well, what am I going to say? I'm like, I don't know. Say what you want to say. Because we all improvise each and every day.
Right.
There's
right.
no script for us.
There's no script for life.
Life is an improv.
Yeah.
The fact that when people get on stage to improv or ever in one of those opportunities to improv, they freeze up is because they're shutting off to what is naturally there, right? The flow of the energy of life.
Yeah.
Take it in, spit it out. Take right. it in, spit it out.
Right.
And yeah, that's it. I will say that as an artist though, or person creating, at a certain point, you know, a singer can sing their same old songs forever.
Uh-huh.
They can go tour doing the same old songs forever.
Right, right.
But comedians can't do the same old jokes forever. They have to keep updating. They have to keep doing new material, new things. Comedy has to keep evolving. You can't stay stagnant. You can't say the same joke. Mm-mm. So in that, you know, the PC world of why things have evolved, they just do.
Yeah.
Songs don't have to. Maybe some songs need to go away because they were bad even back then when you listen to the lyrics. But comedy has to evolve. And then my last beat on that is, and if you look at any comedian, uh-huh. they have a moment in time when they're young, mm-hmm. when they are plugged in to the zeitgeist of the world.
And they're on.
They are on.
Yeah.
They're the right age.
Yeah.
They're the right voice. They're the right generation mm-hmm. to speak to the masses. To even, not only are they plugging into the main consumer, mm-hmm. but even older people get it and younger people get it because mm-hmm. they go, I don't know if I agree with them, but that person is good. But then they get older and they're not as relevant anymore. They're still funny. They still have time.
Is that because they stop growing?
They just...
The timing.
This is a natural...
Yeah.
It's
a circle of life.
Thank you, Simba. It is the natural circle of life.
Yeah, yeah.
You comedy, you know, you look at some of those comedians who you loved when you were younger and they're older now. They're still funny people. Do they know the references anymore? Because once again, comedy is about referencing. If you're not going to be able to reference, you're not going to know what's going on in the world. It's hard to be funny because you're not connecting. The older they get, the less they can connect with an audience. Mm. Doesn't mean they're not funny. They still have the timing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another problem that comedy has. That as a comedian, as a comedic voice, you have a window to relate to the world. Mm. A window. And after that, you do you, and your people will follow. You know, Steve Harvey can go do stand up and it won't be the event it used to be.
It won't be the kings of comedy
right.
anymore.
But it's Steve Harvey.
Yeah.
He has his audience. And the older he gets, the audience it'll dissipate. Mm-hmm. He'll still have his audience. But it's not his time. It's the next one up. Mm-hmm. The comedy. It's always the kind of the next one up for comedic voices. I think more in comedy than anything else, because comedy needs to have a real true connection to the state. Of the world.
Of the society.
Of society, yeah.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
it's not, that's why the old stuff doesn't work anymore. That's why Delirious was plugged into the time.
But it didn't really hold up.
Play Delirious now, Eddie is canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about the timing, right?
It's all about the timing. He's still funny. He's evolved. Is Eddie the rock star that he was? He's an icon to me and a legend to me.
Yeah.
But who would sell out an arena quicker, Eddie or Kevin, mm-hmm. or even somebody
that's coming behind Kevin?
Behind Kevin, the 85 South.
Yeah.
You know, like, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Miles, you know what?
What?
Masterclass, bro. You gave me a masterclass in comedy, and I know that my listeners and my viewers are like, wow, I never thought about this stuff. I just need to know, what's next for you? What's next for you as far as career, and then what are you working on in progress in your own life?
Working with JB, this production company, we have a few things in the works that, you know, trying to get a TV series going, feature film, have some good partnerships on these projects, and, you know, just fingers crossed on doing stuff like that. And that's it. I mean, I'm just hopeful. And
did you expect your career to take this turns and pivots and
no.
You've done a bunch of pivots and flips and all types of stuff?
No, because I like to act.
Yeah.
I write, but I prefer to act. I would much prefer. So, but hopefully I will write something that allows me to act in it, and then I'll live happily. I'm already living happily ever after, but it'll be an extra ever after.
Well, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed this conversation.
You just came over for water.
Yeah, camera set up. I was like, what?
Oh, it's lovely.
Might be too.
Thank goodness I got hair and makeup done before I came in.
Well, you know, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you.
All right.
Bam, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for supporting Works in Progress. See you next time.